the date today is the 20th of February, and I'm sitting with Ismay Benny in her beautiful home. You know, I'd like to start with just saying thank you for giving me this opportunity. And would you just start off by telling us where you lived and what years that you lived in this neighborhood, please?
I came to this neighborhood in 1973, and I lived on Wilcox Street until 1989. And then, because I love this neighborhood, I moved to 268 Major Street, and I've lived there ever since.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what, you said you love it. Do you remember what brought you here?
I can tell you exactly what brought me here. The person I was living with, excuse me, at that time was a documentary filmmaker, and he was doing a film on the Group of Seven, and in the process he'd met Barker Fairley, who'd been very much involved in promoting the Group of Seven's work. And we got friendly with Barker and with Nan, and loved to visit them on Wilcox Street, and loved the street. And one day Barker phoned in a big hurry and said, "There's a house for sale now." And we rushed, and that afternoon we bought the house.
Oh my God, you didn't waste any time.
That's how it happened.
And when did you know that you loved it?
I don't know. I suppose first visiting Barker, and Wilcox is such a beautiful little street, you know, with a very wide sidewalks and you know, near College Street, near restaurants and so on. And I think it was just an immediate reaction.
So I suppose that's why you rushed and bought it.
Quite.
As soon as
exactly
you learned
right.
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For, I can tell you this, $42,000.
What do you think it would sell for today, that place?
Million, close to, no, maybe
oh.
not.
Oh, okay.
Eight, 900,000, yeah. Well, the big houses sell for over $1 million, but I would have, this was a smaller house, I wouldn't put it there.
Yeah. What was that street like at the time? Who lived on Wilcox?
At that time, it was quite mixed. There were academics, I'm not sure if X is the right word, Barker Fairley, an artist and Goethe scholar and U of T professor. Bud Milnes was the head of the German department at U of T, so there was quite a bit of that. Chuck Hanley, who was I don't know if he was involved with U of T, a psychiatrist. And then the housing, U of T housing.
You mean fraternity homes?
Yes, not fraternity, I can't think of the word. The
residences?
No, there's a word for it, it'll come. Anyway, but a lot of student housing,
right.
And they were awful. And people like Chuck Hanley actually ran his house like a rooming house too, and so we had a lot of noise and student problems on the block. There were still quite a few Eastern European families on the block, both sides.
So those were new immigrants?
Well, they had
not
been
so new anymore.
And quite a lot of those. So it was quite mixed, but it wasn't, you know, fashionable, new development mix. It was just, at that point, an easy commute, or not commute, an easy walk to U of T. So it was a kind of very gemütlich mix in those days.
It was an easy walk to the University of Toronto, on the doorstep of the university.
That's right.
So let's just digress for a minute. What was it like being a neighbor of the University of Toronto?
Well, there were a lot of problems, I would say, of being a neighbor of the university in those days. The first, obviously, was because of the students who lived in the housing on Wilcox Street, and there were quite a lot of them, and they were very rowdy. I remember at one time there was some at the corner house and the Chuck Hanley house, and there were some further up the block, and they'd kind of put their speakers out to play to each other. It was very, very bad. It was really bad. So that was one problem.
That's a big one.
A big one. And we were constantly going to the place that I can't remember that ran the, some of the student housing. It'll come to me. And the other problem really became one of university territorial expansion, wanting to use develop the Robert Street playing field. That was a very big issue when I came into the neighborhood.
So what does that mean, they wanted to expand?
I can't remember the exact details, but there was, I think they wanted to build on it in those days.
Oh, so they wanted to put some structures on
yes,
that.
Yes, I think they were going to develop it in some ways, yes.
And is that something that the community...
Community hated. They didn't want to lose the green space and the ability to share, you know, facilities on that space with the university. It was a very big issue. Pierre Beekmans can probably talk to it better than I can, but that was the main issue. And always the fear that they would cross Spadina and take over some housing was always a fear of the neighbors in those days.
So in that respect, the University of Toronto was not such a good neighbor.
No, it wasn't a good neighbor at all. I think they learned a bit in the process that you have to be more conciliatory with your neighbors, and they had less. Then they started having less funds available to do all of this. Right now, I'm not quite sure what their position is. They seem to be back in development, but I don't know.
Yeah, we're having some issues around
that. Yeah, College Street and so on. Yeah.
So that's kind of an old story, what we're going through now. You're talking about what's happening 40 years ago.
It would have happened, in the early, mid-70s, yes. As I think Pierre is a better person than me to tell you this because I was president of the Residents Association at some point in that period, but I think Pierre was really more involved than I was.
Uh-huh. So you were an activist in this neighborhood.
No, that period I certainly was.
What was the Residents Association called at that time?
Sussex Ulster Residents Association.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And that got changed, I think, about
10
years ago.
To Harvard Village, yes. Uh-huh. The other big issue in those early days, and Rose could have spoken to it, was Doctors' Hospital and their development, which I think was more ambitious than what we ended up with the... Kensington Gardens. I think there was a much, much more ambitious development planned, and there was a lot of opposition to that. And that was another political issue of the time.
You're saying that this neighborhood had to fight to keep it from being taken over by the university to preventing big institutions. And you were one of the people who really.
Well, I was
worked
not,
for all
I was
that.
One of, you know, a small player in all of that. I'm not a player. Oh, I'm just trying to think of other issues. I don't know what the issues are now. I drop in and out. I don't go to the Harvard meetings. They drive me crazy. Some of the participants. But if there's something that I really believe in, I would jump right in.
Well, and before I turned on the tape, you mentioned that you came to the neighborhood just after the...
Spadina Expressway, yes.
Yeah, so you came at that. So that was another thing that this community took very active
role in. At that time it was Alan, the late Alan, I can't think
Powell?
Of his name, Powell, who was the big activist behind that, yes.
Well, we still have a lot of active people in this neighborhood.
Yes, absolutely. I think of other things that I was involved in those reasonably early days, and the other was the maze, the traffic maze.
Okay.
Which was quite interesting because we'd had traffic accidents, and there was a strong feeling we needed to protect particularly children on the streets, so we put in a traffic maze. There was a lot of dissension. It was kind of quite interesting, and this is my observation, that people like myself thought it was a wonderful idea, but a lot of the older immigrant families didn't. And I think it was partly because, you know, the American dream is the car. And if your car accessibility and driving is somehow affected, you take it amiss, you resent it. So there was quite a lot of opposition. But we put the maze in, and it's worked.
Well, I interviewed, about 6 months mm-hmm. ago, I interviewed somebody who was living on yeah. Borden at that time, yeah. south of Bloor, with young children, yeah. and she said, I want to thank Richard Gilbert. She was very grateful because they used to just whiz down her street.
Well, yeah.
So you were involved in that.
I was very
thank
much
you.
Involved thank in that. I was, I think, president of the Residents Association wow. at that time, I think. Don't hold me to it, but it was one of the things that I was quite involved in, it, the meetings and the discussions. And
so I think you made...
For CAR and against CAR yeah. is what it came down to.
Well, it's, you know, what some people might think of as against CAR is yeah. for safety and
yes.
for people.
But it wasn't quite viewed in the safety issue as much. There was certainly opposition. Anyway, we got it, and I don't think anybody complains any longer. But certainly maybe the people who did are no longer in the neighborhood anyway. You know, there's been a fair exodus. I'll leave that. I won't. Or do you want me to connect?
Whatever you like.
Sure. You know, I was thinking back to those days. I remember going to a Residents Association meeting, and people were very, you know, there was a core group who were very, very active, but it basically was not a very big organization. It was just really, and it's probably the same now, just a handful of people who were really dedicated to what was happening in the neighborhood. I remember getting, I can't remember if it was a phone call or we didn't have email in those days, or it was at a meeting, somebody said to me that they saw me walking around the streets looking in people's windows. And it was hard to explain that I do it because I love the neighborhood and I love looking in people's windows to see, you know, what they're doing.
I feel the same way, yeah. and I'm very grateful when people have the curtains open
yes.
and the lights turned on at night.
Right, yeah.
It's fun to
yeah.
look. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I remember that.
But
criticism.
It sounds like an accusation.
It was an accusation in those days. I'm sort of waffling a little bit. I'm just, as things come to my mind, I'm just talking. When we bought the house on Wilcox Street, I think we were the first people in the area to be what was called in those days white painters, people who did what you can see in this house, take walls down mm-hmm. and open up. And neighbors would walk around and come and peer in my windows to see what was going on. Of course, you know, renovation has become huge in the area since, but I think we were one of the first.
Was that taken in a positive way? I mean, what do you think?
Oh, I don't think, I'm not sure if it was positive or negative. It was just, look what they're doing.
Yeah. When you moved to this house,
right?
You're saying this one had already been done. Mm-hmm. In terms of architecture and changes that people have done to their homes, what do you see? And do you think it was done in a wise way, the kinds of changes that people have made to keep the nature of the neighborhood?
I think the nature of the neighborhood has been fairly well kept. You know, people are entitled to their own taste, and I know, you know, if you want to put angel stone or whatever brick on your house, it's your personal taste. But I think in general, people who have renovated or extended have kept the flavor. I don't think of any examples or none come to my mind where there's been some horrific change. I mean, around the corner in Sussex, a huge big house was built right next to a smaller house. It looks like a suburban house, but it's not a terrible, terrible, terrible eyesore. It's not right, but it's not an eyesore. So I think it's not bad.
I remember when it was going up,
yeah.
and my feeling was similar to what you were saying. But they tried to keep it somewhat in the nature
yes.
of
yeah.
the brick and
yeah. Yeah.
And
the shape.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
But no, I think, you know, we've done a fairly good job. I think the people who've bought into the neighborhood and do it because they like the neighborhood and they like the flavor of it, and have the sensibility to try and maintain what we've got. At least I'm hoping that's true.
You talked about liking the neighborhood when people come. What do you like about this neighborhood?
It's when I say, what do I like about this neighborhood? You know, when you've lived here 40 years, it's your neighborhood. You don't think about liking it or not liking it. I like the location. I like the mix of people. I like being able to walk to things like the movies, the museums, the selection of restaurants. I've been lucky in the friends I've made.
In the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood. So, yeah, it's, I, you know, maybe if I was living in Scarborough, it would be the same. It's just where you end up and how your life shapes out.
Yeah, yeah. So when you bought the house on Wilcox very rapidly, 40 years ago, you've never turned back.
Oh, no. I've had no regrets. I can't imagine living anywhere else.
In terms of the population, you described Wilcox, academic people, students, rowdy students, some immigrants who had come maybe a few decades earlier. What are the changes that you see in the neighborhood in the 40 years since you've moved here?
I think in the 40 years that I've lived here, there's been, I think a lot of the Portuguese and Eastern European immigrants have left. I'm not sure what is left of those groups, but I imagine very little. And there's been a huge influx of people like what I was 40 years ago who are buying and renovating houses and like to live here for the same reasons I do. So I think there's a much bigger, as I, you know, my phrase, white painter population now.
And a lot, as you say, a lot of the Portuguese and Italian people
have gone. And just there were more across the road from me when I moved here, and I think there's maybe one family left. I think there were three or four when I moved here 20 whatever years ago.
You talked about the cars and making the maze to slow down the traffic. What else can you say about the roads and transportation in this neighborhood?
I think we're very lucky in this neighborhood to have very, very good transportation, a lot of opportunities to move around the city because we have the subway, the Bloor, and now we have the Spadina, the
University
Spadina line. So there are two subway possibilities very close. We have the Spadina streetcar. So I think those are, you know, fantastic. You can't do better than that. And that's all, you know, very close by. And you even have Bathurst Street, which is not very far away. And there you have the Bathurst bus and streetcars. So we're very, very lucky with transportation. We have bike lanes. I'm not sure I'm pro or against. I don't want to get into that one. I certainly think putting a bike lane on Bloor Street is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but nobody's asked me. You know, it's a major east-west thoroughfare. People coming from the west side of the city use it, and there are not much or many other choices for downtown, so... You know, I'm not anti-car in that
respect.
I'm not.
I use my bike, but I'm certainly not anti-car.
I'm not anti-car at all.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think there's got to be a balance, a logical balance.
When you lived on Wilcox and now here, what did you have immediately behind your house in terms of garden, patio?
When I lived on Wilcox Street, I had a garden going back to the back lane and a garage on it.
Mm-hmm. And what did you have in your garden?
In my garden, I had, at that time, there were some big maple trees that were eventually quite rotten and had to come down, which was a pity.
Yeah.
And I tried I remember the right at the beginning planting some, you know, vegetables, but because of the trees, it never worked. So I just had a pretty garden. I had a deck off the back and a pretty garden with clematis and a dog who dug everything up.
If the squirrels and raccoons didn't get there first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you have behind your this
home? Right now I have off my deck a very, very, very pretty garden, which I love.
Are you a gardener?
No, I'm not a gardener. It's established now. I have very little to do. I put things in pots, and then I have a garage which backs onto, or not backs onto, which is on the back lane.
Mm-hmm. And your front, you have both these homes, Wilcox and Major, are you a front porch user? And how have you seen these being used in your 40 years here?
I think in the earlier years here, the front porch was important to, again, I think it was a sort of immigrant thing, I'm not trying to be biased here, but it was, you know, you sit out in the front and watch the street. I think where people rented out rooms and had nowhere to go, maybe they would use the front porch. I love my front porch. I even put a bench there that I could sit on it, but I find I don't use it as much as I thought I would. I like my back garden. It's very private and pretty, and I can read out there. So,
but isn't that lovely that you live so right in the heart? You're so central, and you can sit outside, and it's quiet enough.
I always say to people that on a Saturday night, I can sit in my back garden, and I'm not aware of Bloor Street.
Isn't that remarkable?
Which is remarkable, yes. The other big issue, by the way, that reminds me of is the Brunswick Tavern, which has been a huge issue in this neighborhood from the day I arrived here, and the noise from the Brunswick Tavern and the people spilling out. It's still a problem. The patrons come and either walk home along Major Street or come and get their cars on Major Street, and sometimes between 2 and 3 in the morning there's a lot of rowdiness.
Is that weekends or during the week too?
Usually weekends. I would say Friday and Saturday.
So and all seasons are...
Probably you hear it more in the summer because windows are open.
Right.
I haven't been as aware of it this winter, but I'm not sure if it's weather-related or what.
So you living on Major south of Bloor, you're affected by the Brunswick
House. Totally, yes. Yeah. Yes. It was terrible in the early days. There was music up in the Albert Hall upstairs, and they would open the windows and the fire escapes, and the noise was horrendous. And I would put a coat over my nightclothes and go there and say, do something. It was really dreadful. And now without that, I think they're more responsible about noise, and I think betting is a nice quiet occupation. I'm very happy if they filled the whole place as off-track betting. But it's certainly better. Yeah. And I understand that the current lease is up for the people who are currently running it, so I don't know what's going to happen.
You know, I don't know. I know it's been such a big problem, and it's quite disgusting and annoying. But I don't know anything about that. But nobody will miss those patrons if they leave our neighborhood.
No, I think they could make it to a community center.
Yeah, and I will.
Yeah,
but no, just about anything would be better.
Yeah, it'll always be a pub, and it'll always attract students.
Yeah, that has certainly been a thorn in the side of this neighborhood.
Has always been a big issue.
Anything else that is noisy and annoying right here at Major and Bloor?
Annoying to me personally, but this is, I'd be shouted down by all my neighbors. Sometimes we have musicians on the street corners, you know, who with boom boxes, and I just find listening to somebody else's music an imposition. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's music. It's better than other things.
Sure. And you're close enough to Bloor that you'll get that.
Yes. Yeah, I sometimes think I would like to be maybe a half a block or a block further south. But it's not a major problem, really. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing I wanted to talk about were restaurants.
Please. Yes, please go ahead.
If I can. I think in the last, you know, few years, Harvard Street has developed into Restaurant Row. It's changing again because there are places for sale and so on. And it's beginning finally to take as a Restaurant Row, and we've got some, you know, grown-up places to eat. For me, I think the big sadness is we don't have grown-up restaurants on Bloor Street. You know, there's the country style is the only Hungarian left. When I came here, there were lots of Hungarian restaurants. And now it's all, you know, student joints for ribs, or it's sushi, and nowhere where you can sit, or I can only think of one really, where you can sit with a white tablecloth and a nice atmosphere and have a grown-up meal. So, and I think it's because of the University of Toronto.
Mm-hmm. So you feel in that respect Bloor Street has deteriorated,
yes,
in terms of restaurants.
In terms of restaurants and in terms of, I don't know if you remember, there was one called Via Olivetti, which,
yes,
did try,
yes,
a nice Italian restaurant. That didn't make it, you know. I'm not sure if Lacvino or whatever,
yes,
is going to make it either.
Yeah, it's good. Have you eaten there?
It's very nice.
Yeah, it's very good.
But
yeah,
it's a huge space, and it's not quite in the right place for it, I don't think. It's not going to get the Tafel Music dinner crowd.
Yeah.
You might get the Bloor Cinema crowd eventually. I don't know, but
I know I ate there about a month ago. The food was delicious.
It's very good.
And it was people of a certain age who were there.
Of course. Well, we're looking for that kind of place.
It's a quieter,
you know,
place.
I mean, we have. We do have a couple of good Indian restaurants, which is a plus.
Yes. Yeah.
And we do have good buying food selection, if I can't speak English again. You know, the Metro is not the greatest supermarket, but it's there. Bloor Super Save across the road is terrific. They run a very good business. We have Cobb's Bread. We have the Harvard Bakery. I think if you ask why I like the neighborhood, those are, you know, that I could buy, you know, 10 or 20 different kinds of bread within a 10-minute walk.
And you can walk to every one of
these
places.
And I can walk to everyone.
When you came, you said there were different kind of restaurants on Bloor. What about any kind of theaters?
I'm not a theater goer, in terms of live theater.
Or movies.
Movies did change. There was a wonderful theater on College Street when I lived on Wilcox Street, running art movies and sometimes double bills. It was fantastic, and I think that's now a paint shop or a computer shop. That was a terrific place. Live theater, you know, there is the Annex, whatever it's called, on Brunswick. I really don't pay attention to theater, so that's not a good question for me. I love the Bloor Cinema.
Me too.
I miss the movie part of it, but I go quite often to the documentaries.
Yeah, I like it too.
And I think they're doing very well.
Yeah.
They told me they're doing very well, you know, beyond their break-even expectation.
I'm delighted to hear.
Yeah.
I also go to Doc Soup.
I did last one, and I just got a personal invitation to the current one for March the 7th, but I don't think I'll go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Bloor Cinema very much, too.
In
the years since you've been here, in terms of heating the homes, have there been any interesting changes?
I don't know. I've always had a furnace and heated my home. I don't have a comment on that. I do know that there are people in the neighborhood who are, frog power, you know, the solar power, you know, people who are advocates and putting that into their houses, but I haven't gone that route.
The ethnic mix, I think you're saying, was quite different when you came here.
Yes, I think the ethnic mix has changed. I think, as I said, there were a lot more Eastern Europeans, Hungarians, Czechs, Portuguese and Italians from Western Europe in the neighborhood. I do think that's changed. What's interesting, I don't think there's been a huge Asian influx into the this part of the neighborhood. I can't speak because I'm not a demographic person, but you know that I don't see, and I imagine that that is really a population group that's going north Toronto rather than downtown, but I don't know. I really can't speak to that.
Yeah, there were some people that I've that I've interviewed, but I think that has probably diminished. You talked about Harbert Street and all the, as I think you called it, adult restaurants.
Grown up restaurants.
Anything else about Harbert that is that has interested you or caught your attention?
Harbert sort of catches my attention because it's tried to be different things through the years. There was a time there were a few antique dealers trying to get going and it never happened. Then there were restaurants that never happened. So it's really never had an identity, I think. It's just been, you know, Harbert Street. You know, but I, as I say, within the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, five probably, the restaurant seemed to be taking hold, though Messis is changing hands.
Yes.
Momo is for sale.
Yes.
Tati is for sale.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm told, yes.
Ooh.
So there will be more changes, and I'm not sure. And what I'm don't know this for sure, but what I've heard is that both Tati and Momo's have a hard time making a go of it, but I don't know that for sure.
Well, I spoke to Mohammed, and he was saying that he's tired. You know, he renovated the building, and he made the business
made a beautiful patio and all of that,
and wonderful food. So my impression is he's doing okay, but I haven't discussed business part
My you know, people I've talked to said that he's having a hard time making a go of it with that restaurant. And I heard this similarly about Tati, but I don't know. This is gossip.
I'm very sensitive to sound, so I have found Tati too noisy. So
I won't go to Tati if I can't sit up on the beautiful.
It's a lovely patio.
The other, but Shabashu, which is also owned by the Tati people, but in some sort of different combination, apparently.
I think it's
will
the girlfriend.
Will survive, yes.
Yeah. That's right at the corner. I live just south of Shabashu.
Yeah. No, I go and shop there every now and then.
It's a lovely little place. Yeah.
The Harbert Bakery, of course, is the old lady or old gentleman or whatever, grandfather of Harbert Street. It'll be interesting if Ruffy and Susan ever move on, you know, what's going to happen to it.
Well, it's not going to happen soon.
No, for sure.
Yeah. They're comfortable there. The JCC, has that been a part of your life?
I hate the JCC, personally, because I hate exercise. And I just don't like going there. I just don't like, you know, all the Filipino nannies picking up the little brats. I just don't like the atmosphere there. Maybe should be doing it off. I would not quote me on this. Well, I'll talk about the JCC separately, but I would prefer my...
Okay, so we can talk about it after.
We can talk about it after. If you want me to go back on the JCC, I think it's been great for the neighborhood. I think I see all these people, friends, neighbors, going off there to exercise, to use the pool. I don't know to what extent they use it culturally. I really don't know.
Yeah, there are some a few cultural programs.
Yeah, I don't know how the neighborhood uses them, whether we use them as neighbors or whether people come in.
Well, it certainly welcomes... I mean, you don't have to be Jewish to use it.
No, I know that,
yeah.
I think it's been the rejuvenation has been good for the neighborhood. Yeah. It really has. I mean, we could have had a worse corner. You know, there are other, you know, things that were supposed to have happened around there that haven't happened, like the metro was going, that site was going to be redeveloped. You know, with the sort of financial problems of the last few years, development has slowed down, so I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
I don't know about that, how about Kensington Market in relation to our neighborhood?
When I even before I came to live in this neighborhood, I would go to the Kensington Market, but it was the Jewish market.
Yes.
When I came here. Then it's become, I don't know when, how many other markets it's become, Greek and Portuguese, and I don't know what it is now. It seems to be more Latino now. And I love the market. Mm-hmm. I like walking down there. I like, you know, when I go for a walk, go and eat at Il Trompo and have some tacos, or I go and buy cheese or whatever. So I love the Kensington Market. But it's also changing. Slightly more gentrified, mm-hmm. and it'll be interesting again to see what the next transmogrification of it will be. But I think it is changing.
Yeah, I'm grateful that it's not changing drastically and quickly.
Yeah.
Because when I first came to Toronto, that's what happened to Yorkville.
Yeah.
Yorkville, I came from California. Right. It was just an extension mm-hmm. of California. And then all of a sudden it was today's Yorkville. But it seemed to me I blinked and that changed. Yeah. But Kensington is changing, but gradually.
I agree that Kensington is changing and the change is gradual. And it seems to be in waves of ethnicity, if that's a way of expressing it. As I said, it was Jewish, it was Greek, it was Portuguese, it's whatever it is now. I think it's more Latino than anything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you still like to wander
it. Yeah, and I'm big on Latino food, yes.
Yeah. in terms of the livability and the security of this neighborhood, I'd like you to talk about it today, but also talk about what it's been like for the last four decades since you've been here.
I don't think the livability issue has changed in 40 years. It's a nice neighborhood. It's made its changes, but the changes have not been for the worse. They've been probably for the best. I think we're reasonably secure. We've had slight waves of crime where cars have been broken into. I know in the 40 years I've lived here, I was broken into once on Wilcox Street and twice in this house.
Right.
I think it's small drug-related break-ins, just looking for a quick something to pick up to exchange for drugs. That seems to have improved in the last few years. The police did, we've had meetings with the police, certainly Major Street did, and it seems to be better. I don't have any great security fears, though I do have an alarm system.
So, and you use it whenever you go out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Animals, pets? In the neighborhood or in your home?
When I first lived on Wilcox Street, I remember we went for a walk one night on Robert Street and there was a kid giving away puppies. Miss, do you want a puppy? So I took a puppy home, a really bad puppy.
Oh.
And she was my Jenny and I had her for a long, long time until she died. She was about 16 when she died.
Oh, she lived a long life.
And
she was naughty the whole time, or did you?
Very bad. She, you know, she had, other dogs she was friendly with in the neighborhood, but others she would have killed.
What kind of dog was she?
She was what I call a salad, very mixed.
Uh-huh.
We have here on this block of Major Street, I know of at least three or four dogs. They're not problem dogs. I do know that in the past, I've had neighbors, Brunswick Street neighbors, in particular with dogs in the backyard, who've let the dogs bark all day, you know, and that's really, really distressing. I mean, it hasn't happened recently, but it has happened.
Well, it's very inconsiderate for everybody
else. Just throw the dog out for the day and leave
it. And the dog is miserable.
And it's not just miserable. Anytime somebody walks by, it's a threat and they bark.
Right.
Occasionally people leave dogs in their cars while they go shopping on Bloor Street. It's not a big problem, really.
Mm-hmm. So Jenny was your one naughty
No, I wouldn't do it again. When she died, I was too upset. I would never do it again.
Yeah.
So it's too upsetting.
You became attached to her. Yeah, we do love our animals. When you and I spoke and you said, yes, I could come and meet you, is there anything that I didn't touch on that you had thought about that maybe we should talk about?
No, not really, because I wasn't quite sure what direction you were going to take with this. Mm-hmm. So I'm just blue skying as we go.
Yeah.
And I just, I think what I didn't touch on, again, which is why I like the neighborhood, was the Chinese restaurants going down Spadina.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that as well. I think that's a great asset that we can go and have a nice Chinese meal along Spadina. And that's changed too, but it's...
In what way?
With the change, the restaurants, some of them have come and gone. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by change. But it still seems to be a Chinese row.
Yes.
And I hope that stays.
Me too. Well, I think we've pretty well covered the main topics that I was hoping to cover, and I've enjoyed listening to your stories, and I admire the activism that you...
Well, it was early activism. It hasn't stayed.
But it was at an important time.
Yes, I think so. I think so. And I think Pierre Beekmans is the person you should be talking to about all of that.
Well, you gave me his name and number, and he will hear from me.
Yeah. Terry Philgate, who I gave you his number, Terry, he moved here with me in 73, so he will have different observations to mine, I would imagine. And he's back, and he's back on Wilcox Street, so he can talk about pre-Wilcox and post-Wilcox, because he's living there now, and has dogs. And if you need help, if your group can't help you, I think he could help you record a phone call to Nan Cowley, if you don't have anybody else.
But I'll
be a suggestion,
Well, Ismay, thank you very, very much.
Well, it's nice meeting you, finally.